Collectors, and welcome to episode 72, Dreams. Ooh. So I love dreams and dreaming and all things dreams because I'm fascinated by them and yet plagued by them. It's both a curse and a blessing in my world. I am one of those people that has dreams, remembers them, has them all the time, has them vividly, and yes, I dream in both black and white and color. Isn't that weird? So let's talk about dreams because it's a psychological phenomenon that I'm obsessed with, studied often, and really get a kick out of. And they've even made plays on things. Obviously, Freddy Krueger can get you in your dreams, if you will. It was pretty neat for Wes Craven. And then most recently, the movie Inception with Leo DiCaprio. You definitely should go watch that if you haven't. It's pretty cool. And a lot of what he says is actually true. We know it to be true and things that we have learned in labs. So dreams happen every day. You dream every day, whether you remember them or not. Everybody dreams every day. Now, with that said, dreams and sleep go together. So, you know, I have a wacko sleep schedule, which in my opinion is probably why I dream as much or as vividly as I do. But sleep is when your body is shutting down and it's your subconscious takes over. So if you think of your brain in two parts, where you have the CPU, which is the subconscious part. It's on all the time. It's like a computer. It's, you know, garbage in, garbage out. It is fed everything. It's alert and aware, not consciously. So the lights humming in the background, traffic, noise, pollution, fog, background noises, radio, you know, music, whatever. It's not consciously processing things. It's just subtle and in the background and always on and always taking in info. It's on constantly. Now, if you're on, so the front of your brain, the frontal lobe, is totally focused in your conscious, that is the part that makes judgments and is subjective. So that's the part that gets nervous at a party and thinks, oh, wow, can I talk to this person? I stained my shirt. They're not going to like me. What am I going to do? Where am I going to sit? Who am I going to talk to? Is the boss going to like my presentation? All those little negative thoughts. So that's why you got to slap that guy sometimes and turn him off. And generally, when you sleep, that's when that happens. Although, if you have trouble sleeping, or you have a lot of anxiety, or you're unable to sort of quiet yourself, and maybe, God forbid, insomnia, where you just don't sleep much at all, or have a tough time falling asleep and staying asleep, sometimes people will take enhancers, whether it's melatonin, which, you know, I've never done any of that, but a lot of people swear by it. I would say that it's a cautionary tale, because all that I've read is that you have enough melatonin in your system to sleep properly, and it's more of an environmental problem that you're not. I get it if you're desperate and you want to try and sleep and you grasp at straws. I'm not saying I wouldn't do that if I was in that position, but it's generally considered not good for you to add more melatonin to your system, even though it's considered a gummy or a benign thing, or, you know, it's a natural remedy. But it's like vitamins. You know, people push a lot of vitamins and things saying, oh, you need this, this, and this. And most of the doctors I've talked to always say, you know what, half of it is just discarded, excreted, and extra, so it's not even worth it. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that swear by them, and that's fine. You do you. It's not going to bother me either way, but just be aware that there's recent studies that are pretty decent saying that melatonin, you have what you need, and you shouldn't do that. Now, I get it. Again, if you're desperate and you want to sleep, and that's a natural way to do it, sure. Obviously, people can use sleeping pills as well. That can sometimes cause a deeper sleep. And if you don't have the time to commit to sleep, it's not a sleep fast situation. And that's often what people try to do. They go to bed too late. They wake up too early. They're still wasted, or they didn't have a restful sleep. They get crazy dreams or no dreams that they can remember as a result of it. And then they still feel, you know, chemical, if you will, the next day. So if you are going to commit to something like that and take a sleeping pill, make sure that you commit the time to sleep and sleep it all off and through, and then you actually have that rejuvenating sleep that you need. If you don't get it, it's not to say that you're not going to dream, but chances are you didn't get good sleep. It's not deep sleep, so you're not going to get to good stages of REM, also known as rapid eye movement, where if you actually watched someone who was sleeping, I know, creepy, but if you did, their eyes are actually kind of skitzing back and forth, left and right, under the eyelid, because they're making rapid eye movements. And it's usually right before you wake up. It's funny to me and fascinating how the brain just sort of knows that the best dream time is before you're going to wake up. And yet, even if you set an alarm clock for 7 o'clock, I'm just making this up, and your brain is conscious of that fact, when you're in a state of sleep, it's sort of that CPU part that takes over. And it knows that your body's going to hit, if it's doing things properly, that REM sleep right before, you know, you're going to actually be awoken. So it's interesting to me that it just knows to do that. So, you know, that's when dreams happen. Now, they happen every day. You might not be a person that can remember them. I am. Do I remember every dream that I ever had? Pretty much the ones that I do remember, yes. And again, if you didn't remember it, then how would you know that you didn't remember it? Sometimes you know you dreamt, but you don't know what it was. Can't make sense out of it. That's, you know, very common too. And sometimes people feel like they can't wake up from a dream. I've had that, and that is a terrifying feeling. Little kids often have night terrors. Adults have nightmares. And, you know, what's the difference? You know, night terrors can wake you up, and you kind of don't know what it is. You just have an icky feeling, and it's a horrible thought. Years ago, in the Middle Ages, they used to believe that if you had night paralysis, and dream paralysis is a real thing, you're often in a dream for whatever it is or whatever reason. Could be a thing, a person, a situation, whatever is chasing after you or coming after you, you feel like you can't move. You actually really can't at that time in your mind. Your mind has sort of trapped you. Now, if you got woken up, yeah, you'd be fine. But it's a dangerous state to feel in. You know, obviously it's scary and you don't want to feel like you can't move. Often people heavy breathe and get nervous and they might start to have night sweats. But the medieval people believed that when that happened, it was somebody trying to get a hold of you or like a demon trying to come get you or somebody trying to possess you. God, I hope that's not true. But, you know, we've all been there, I would think, at some point. If you haven't faced this, I'm glad you haven't. And if you have, I think it's just a common sleep practice that happens and it's not a dark force like was thought, you know, back in the day. So here we are with black and white and color. Why do I bring this up? I think it's crazy that I still dream in black and white very often. A lot of people think I'm insane for that. You can't control it. It's not like you change a channel. But you may dream in black and white or color. I dream in both. It depends on where I'm at and the location, but it happens. There's no rhyme or reason to this. It just is. The other thing that's a little fun fact is that faces in dreams, even if they're no-name faces, it's a crowd, you've seen those people before. Now, you know, how do we prove that? Okay, well, I can't cut open brains to tell you, but it is very much believed that the brain cannot create a face. It has to be someone that you knew. So even if you don't know that person personally, you saw that person in a store or whatever, and you might not make that connection. But again, your CPU is on all the time. That subconscious never turns off. So that back side of the brain, if you will, in the back office is always taking in information. So people on the street, people that you have met, I just got a flash of Queen and David Bowie in my head when I said people on the street, always thinking in musical terms, getting ready for spec gigs. Well, that's another story for another day. But anyhow, it is definitely something where you can't make up a face from scratch. So you just have those nameless, faceless people that are in your dreams. Even though you don't know them, you pass them somewhere at some point in your life. So fun fact there. Dreams feel longer than they are. Now, the average dream time could be between 2 and 6 minutes. Some people argue that they dream for hours. I'm a freak, and I admit it openly. I can dream. And if I get woken up in a dream for whatever reason, I can actually often go back to bed and finish that dream or jump back into that dream. That's not a talent that I can hone. It's just something that happens. Obviously, it's my subconscious hard at work. I like to think it's because I have a vivid imagination, which can be, again, a blessing or a curse. So you can dream much longer in your feeling of that dream, but it's probably only a few minutes in reality. And they seem very real. You know, they can make you have sweats and heart palpitations and freak out and feel things or not feel things or feel like you're falling or whatever. I have fallen out of bed. I have certainly sweat myself awake or to sleep. I have definitely felt dream paralysis. I have countless nightmares. I've had some great dreams too. I've woken up drooling, crying, tearing, heart pounding out of my chest, thought I was having a heart attack. I've woken up having anxiety. I've woken up thinking someone was dead and believing it for a long time or that someone was hurt. And I really have to kind of smack myself awake out of a deep sleep or into reality because my dreams are so vivid. And, you know, you might be that way and you might not. And if you're not a person that dreams often or remembers them, that could be good too because you don't have some of this. if it's a good dream, it's great. If it's a bad dream, it's terrifying. I can say that from experience. You will never die in a dream. If you die, you're going to wake up immediately. You can't see your own demise. You might see yourself off a cliff. You might see yourself get shot. You might see something happen where you're about to drown or whatever. And you might feel that lack of oxygen or, you know, water or drool or whatever, but you're not actually going to die. You don't die in your dream. You kind of have that tipping point of equilibrium in your brain. Same idea like when I fell out of bed, and I've done that a few times. If you have that falling feeling, it's that like a kick, it's like a sensation, it will wake you up, because that idea like, you're falling, that is what kicks you into gear and you snap out of the dream and you never actually see yourself die. Because your brain can't function with you dead. So the idea of like brain in a vat, and I'll say this is where psychology meets biology, meets physiology, meets I would say 20 other genres, but when they really all kind of meet together, and philosophy is probably the fourth big one, because it's almost like the Matrix. You know, you're unplugged in, you know, this theory, and you're believing what's going on. You might not really be in that stance. You're in this dream world, but if you're dead in the dream world, you can't exist outside of it. So that's why you don't die in your dreams. Nor should you. Inception, the movie with Leo DiCaprio, go see it. It's great. It talks about this a lot. It talks about that kick and that equilibrium feeling. It also talks about getting lost in dreams and layers of dreams. Now, obviously, it was located in the fiction section of the library, and it's worth a watch. But there's a lot of things that they say that give credit to this, and they talk about the idea of like a dream within a dream. Now, in that movie, they were creating sedatives on purpose to dream within a dream so they could go deeper into layers, and each layer was a different amount of time. Now, I don't doubt that the layering thing could naturally happen. I'm not saying go get a sedative situation and do that. But I think naturally there's been times where I have dreamt, and in my dream I'm dreaming. And then in that dream I've dreamt again. I can't say I've ever gone more than two levels deep, but again, I don't plan that. That just sort of happens. Whether you have them or not, you may or may not be able to remember them, but you do have them. And then there's the whole symbolism of them. There are things that pop up as consistent themes or items in dreams. Very often, people say that when you dream of a death, people get very scared. But in reality, when you dream of a death, you're supposed to be hearing about a wedding. So I'm sure there's a lot of spouses out there that would argue that's true. But when you dream of a death, you hear of a wedding. And that's just kind of that's where the psychological and the metaphysical sort of meet, because there's a lot of pieces and components that are often consistent. Water is a huge component of dreams. Water is the deepest part of your subconscious. And they say that the style and type and thickness or temperature of the water can dictate a lot of what is in your mind's eye. So, for example, if you're dreaming of water, you're in the deepest part of your subconscious. Is it a flood? Are you in the ocean? Are you surrounded by that water? Are you drowning in that water? Are you treading that water? Are you happy in a pool? On the other side, is it a iceberg, in which case there's a little bit above the consciousness that you're allowing, but then there's this whole huge problem underneath that you're not dealing with, and it's solid like a rock, so it's really a problem that's bothering you. It's representative of that. Is the water liquid? Is it hot water? That could be symbolic physically and psychologically. You know, you're in hot water. Is it a problem? Or are you physically like warm? It could be. Sometimes your body will react if you're hot or cold or whatever it is physically, and it'll translate to a dream. Sometimes there's psychological stuff going on and it translates to a dream. And there's a lot of times when you don't want to think about it, believe me, it's going to show up in your dream. It might show up a different way, and it might show up in a different style, substance, item. But it's going to get at you if it wants to. If you're that person that's like, nope, I'm going to compartmentalize and shut this off and I'm not going to think about it, let me just tell you ain't running away. I'm here to tell you that it will get you, and it'll get you when you're most vulnerable in the happy, relaxed dream state. It will come for you in the night, literally. So you're not going to escape it, you know, especially if you're a person that has a lot of anxiety, a lot of angst. My advice to you would be try to embrace the awful, embrace the suck, if you will. Try to go through whatever the bad thing is, or you know, work it out. I'm not saying keep yourself awake at night, but you know, acknowledge that dream. Acknowledge the bad thing that you don't want to do, or you know, that paper that you're putting off, or that conversation that you don't want to have, or whatever thing you're afraid of, and try to combat it, because luck favors the prepared. And if you can come at it from a proactive angle, it's going to be better than if you let it just fester. When you leave a little splinter in your mind, eventually it gets infected and bad things happen. And dreams will get you. I will tell you that. Dreams will just keep coming. They'll get worse. They'll get more intense. And there's no predictability to it. And when you're asleep, you know, if it's bad enough if you're already not sleeping or stressed about this daytime awake thing, don't drag it into the nighttime. And when you're not awake and supposed to be rejuvenating, it's just horrible. There's a lot of psychological implications two dreams. I mean, some of them are basic, like residual dreams. For example, maybe you, I do this all the time. I love watching Walking Dead. You know, I love my Greg Nicotero zombies and whatnot. So pretty much every Sunday night, I dream something about The Walking Dead. I watched it. I like it. And it's funny because for me, the zombies aren't like a bad thing in that situation. I dream that I'm like with them, part of the cast, or I was sitting on the couch and talking dead with Chris Hartwick, or I'm talking to one of the stars, or I'm in the episode. And it's a positive dream for me. Like, I get a kick out of that. I love Jaws. I love sharks. I watch it every time it's on. So I often dream of water or sharks. I have dreamt of being swimming, you know, being in water, swimming next to a shark, grabbing onto a fin and hitching a ride. I have dreamt of swimming with Jaws himself. I know. It's like he's a celebrity. He is. And don't say he's not, because he's very cool. And his name is Bruce, but we don't talk about that. So, yeah, I've had residual dreams. Or maybe, like, you went somewhere, you went to a ball game, and you caught the ball, or you were on the Jumbotron, or somebody said something to you, and it was a positive experience. There was a lot associated with it, so your mind's eye is still seeing it. That's just a residual dream, and they could kind of be explained away very easily, because it's something that happened for real that you watched or took in throughout the day. They call that flashbulb memory. And it's interesting because, again, where the biological meets the physiological meets the psychological, and sometimes even meets up with the metaphysical, or meets up with the unexplainable or the philosophical, a lot of things can go awry here. So the idea of like brain in a vat, you know, pretending that there's like this matrixy situation where, you know, you think there's a person in there, but there's really a monkey inside a box taking information in and out. And, you know, you thought this whole time it was an intelligent being, and, oh, just, you know, it's a big joke. Well, you don't know what's in there. You know, you're asleep. You can't really ask your subconscious what's going on. All you know is that it's a functional computer that's on all the time, processing constantly and taking in what's on. So, you know, residual things, like I said, can be explained away. Some other things might not be so explainable, or why did I have that dream, or how it was so disturbing, or that was so weird, or, you know, why did that occur? And there's no real rhyme or reason. Unless often it's something that you be pointed to, situation that's bothering you, or something that you're deliberately avoiding and you want to get rid of, or you're just having trouble doing so. Could be an upcoming event. Could just be nerves, you know, giving a big presentation, you have some sort of homework, you have a project, you have, you know, maybe you're getting married, getting divorced, maybe you're buying a house, maybe you're buying a car, whatever, any kind of thing, having a child, whatever, any big event in your life, and it could translate into the dream world as well. The dream states and dreamscapes are often something that you really, it's elusive. You can't get away from it. You're going to experience it, like it or not. Might not remember it, but it's there all the time, like Santa, waiting and watching. And this is probably the part where I should tell you that because I have had so many crazy dreams, and I don't claim to be any kind of soothsayer or you know, premonitionist or psychic or anything like that. I'm fascinated by those people. But I wrote a couple of books. And the first book that I wrote was called Seven Dreams. And I wrote it because I had, over the course of my life thus far, seven crazy dreams that actually happened in real life that I never would have thought. Some of them were very, I'll say, symbolic, where one thing sort of replaced another item. Some of them were straight up verbatim, piece for piece, person for person, time for time, thing for thing. And that scared me beyond. And it's also nothing I could do about it. So hindsight's 2020, and I wrote the book, so it's pretty cool. So check out Seven Dreams if you're interested. It is in Amazon. You can pick it up, and it's also something that we can, you know, create links on the sites for you to pick up if you would like to read it. I'd love to hear what you have to say about it, so feel free to comment and tell me how crazy dreams maybe you've had or things that you have done that would be shareable, because these were unexpected to me. And it just was, again, something I can't do anything about, and yet fascinating, you know. So terrifying at the time, but, you know, they happened, and hindsight's 2020. On the negative side, 100%, and this would come up later, little did I know, my dad passed away a few years ago, and something that I never would have expected, didn't know existed, and this is where the physiological can really cross over in a negative way. He passed from a disease called Lewy body dementia. And I never heard of it. And it's what Robin Williams passed from as well. And, or was going to pass from, I should say. It really affects the psyche. And it can lay dormant for years. My sister took the time to research it. And there was a very in-the-know neurologist who finally, literally like 2 or 3 days before my father passed, we could not figure out what was wrong with him. And he was behaving very differently physically, and, you know, heat and cold, and very sensitive to things. And he'd put covers on, he'd throw covers off, he would be chewing something, and then he would not want to chew it anymore. And, you know, he had trouble swallowing and couldn't come up with words. And then when he was more mobile, the first signs of it, you know, we thought he was just having some sort of older person episode or some sort of dementia or some sort of problem with Alzheimer's. None of that checked out, and we couldn't figure it out. And eventually, when we got the diagnosis, it was way too late. Unfortunately, he passed a few days later, literally. But one thing that he kept doing, he was in this like this hallucinogenic state where he was dreaming, and then he would wake up, but he wasn't necessarily out of the dream. He would believe that the dream was real, and sometimes it would translate into really talking him off the ledge. I mean, there were times where he would fall or he was doing something crazy, and I had to like grip him up and put him back to bed. Once I caught him like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, standing over his bureau, touching things, picking up vials and bottles and things and deodorant and perfume in reality in the dark, and he was looking into a mirror, and in his mind, he was making pizza. That was not happening in reality, but he thought it, and in his reality, it was. He was awake, he was standing, he was talking, and he like thought, oh, he had to hurry up and make pizza. And that is something that he did a lot. You know, he was a baker for a long time, way earlier in his life, and he just believed at 80 years old that he was getting ready to make pizza, and you could not talk him out of it. And I was like, Pop, you know, stop, okay? There's nobody here, and you're touching deodorant and hairspray. And he goes, no, I'm not. What are you talking about? You know, and I really had to kind of like force him into understanding that and looking at it. And he never really did believe me. And eventually he'd be like, oh, what do I know? And he would kind of walk away and go to bed. But that happened more and more often. And they say that it's something that can lay dormant for like up to 20 years. And there's almost it's the most misdiagnosed thing. Apparently over 1 million people a year have it, and it goes undetected, and unfortunately just eventually takes their life force away. And the dreams, one of the telltale signs is that you have very vivid dreams, often nightmares, and you thrash and have problems. So you can understand why I'm totally paranoid, because I definitely have always had that, and I know he always did too. Looking back, I can't say I noticed anything odd until it was close to the end, but he was definitely saying and doing some weird things inside a year of before he passed, before he ever got physically disabled or more so mentally, because he was just saying and doing weird things for him, but nothing was like off the rails. And that is probably one of the first times that I've actually heard dreams as a warning or diagnosis for something. So Lewy body dementia, horrible thing. I hope no one you know ever has it or gets it, and it is sadly untreatable. So I just found out about that the hard way, but I would be remiss to not mention it in the middle of the segment about dreams, and obviously knowing the effects that it can have, and it can make you actually see things, hallucinate, you know, it's really, really bad. So not something that anybody wants. On the flip side, if you are a dreamer in general, you know, sometimes people can have a very positive effect from dreams or have very positive dreams over and over again. And, you know, that's, you keep a dream book, you know, keep a dream diary, write it down. If you can remember it and you've got the wherewithal to remember parts of it, you can even go for fun, you know, get a dream book online or look one up and it'll tell you the different symbolisms behind certain items or locations or things like that. I dream a lot about our old shore house. I dream a lot about specific instances that have happened. And a lot of times too, this is where the, you know, the brain's a tough thing because you can't really study it while the person's alive. Yeah, you can hook up electrodes and things, but you certainly can't take it apart and figure it out. Flashbulb memory is a unique thing. So flashbulb memory is the psychological phenomenon that makes you remember things as if it was a picture in your head. You know, time is linear in your mind, and you're always thinking, what date was that? And when did this happen? And you get this like quick flashbulb, you know, of this thing. Could be your fifth birthday party, could be, you know, a prom, could be a wedding, could be a specific day or date, time, venue, action, but you get these flashbulb memories. And they kind of create this catalog in your head. And I would argue that it's much like your cell phone. You can go back and look at a picture or look at the video. Some are more vivid than others. And, you know, they're all in there and there's a huge catalog of them. Eyewitness testimony is highly unreliable. So it's a very good chance that you didn't remember something correctly or that there's some detail that's skewed, but you generally remember the event and you have an idea as to what happened. And that's kind of how you catalog and categorize all these things in your mind. And you could very easily have a flashbulb memory that just never goes away. It's like that picture of that moment in time was captured and it's there forever. So, you know, I got the puppy on this day and you remember everything about it. So that's pretty true. And even when you're young, I have a very good memory. And I think that helps with this, with dreams and certainly remembering different things. But I kind of comfortably go back to about 18 months where I can remember things. Most people can't do that. That's okay. Not a problem either way. So that's just a little look at dreams, and maybe it taught you some things that you didn't know or gave you some fascinating fun facts to share with your friend Cliff Clavin, that I get called that by my sister all the time because I know lots of useless things about lots of cool topics. But hey, that's what makes it, you know, the Eclectic Collection, and that's what makes it cool. Be an Eclector if you're not, sign up because you should be. And absolutely go back and let me know if there's anything that you would like to hear about, because I would love to share that with you. And chances are I have some sort of crazy knowledge of it, because you never know. If you liked what you heard today, then check us out at EclecticCollectionPodcast.com or listen to us on your preferred platform. I'm Terry Tenaglia. Thanks for listening.